Yasodhanandan Prachachanaranjana Yasodhanandan Prachachanaranjana Jamuna Thira Panachari Jamuna Thira Panachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari
Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Padibrajakacharasa Asthotar Sita Sri Shimad A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai ISKCON BBT Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Padibrajakacharasa Asthotar Sita Sri Shimad Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananti Koti Vaishnav Brinda Ki Jai Namacharya Srila Hariras Thakur Ki Jai Prem Sikaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Brinda Ki Jai Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopanath Radha Kund Sham Kund Kiti Govardhan Ki Jai Sri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Sri Navadvip Sri Mayapur Dham Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai Mathura Dham Ki Jai Dwarka Dham Ki Jai Ganga Mai Ki Jai Yamuna Mai Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Tulasi Devi Ki Jai Samaveda Bhakta Brinda Ki Jai Gopremanandi All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Evam Griheshva Bhirato Vishayan Vivadai Sukhai Seva mano na kachatu syad.
Seva mano na kachatu syad.
Ajastokar ivanala.
Ajastokar ivanala.
Evam griheshva bhirato.
Evam griheshva bhirato.
Vishayan vivadai sukai.
Vishayan vivadai sukai.
सेवम मानो न चातु स्याद आज्यस्तो खाय इवानलः एवं गृहेष्व भीरथो विषयान् विदताय सुखाय सेवं मानो न चातु स्याद आज्यस्तो खाय इवानलः
This way, griheshu, in household affairs, abhirata, being always, vishayan, material paraphernalia, vividai, with varieties of, sukai, happiness. Sevamana, enjoying. Na, not. Cha, also. Atusyat, satisfied him. Ajya stokai, by drops of fat. Eva, like Anala, a fire. In this way, Sobari Muni enjoyed sense gratification in the material world, but he was not at all satisfied. Just as a fire never ceases blazing if constantly supplied with drops of fat. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Material desire is just like a blazing fire. If a fire is continuously supplied with drops of fat, the fire will increase more and more and never be extinguished.
Therefore, the policy of trying to satisfy material desires by catering to one's material demands will never be successful. In modern civilization, everyone is engaged in economic development, which is another way of constantly dropping fat into the material fire. The Western countries have reached the summit of material civilization, but people are still dissatisfied. Real satisfaction is Krishna consciousness. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 5:29, where Krishna says, Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarva loka maheshwaram suhridam sarva bhutanam gyatvamam shantim richchati. The sages, knowing me as the ultimate purpose of all sacrifices and austerities, the supreme lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attain peace from the pangs of material miseries. One must therefore take to Krishna consciousness and advance in Krishna consciousness by properly following the regulative principles. Then one can attain an eternal, blissful life in peace and knowledge. Om Akyantimidandasya Jnananjana Chalakaya Chakshurun Vilitam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Bancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindubhya Evacha Patitanam Bhavanibhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna
Krishna
Hare Krishna. It's my great honor and fortune to be with all of you in New Dwarka, the temple of Sri Sri Rukmini Dwarkadish. In the assembly of their loving servants. Hare Krishna. We are reading today from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 6, entitled The Downfall of Sobari Muni, Text 48. In today's purport, Srila Prabhupada is explaining a foundational principle that we require to understand very carefully to make true spiritual progress. Krishna tells in Gita, Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Punar Avartunarjuna, that from the highest planet in this material universe, down to the lowest, they're all essentially places of misery. Because everything is temporary. Nothing is stable. But then Krishna gives the supremely most positive, hopeful promise that one who attains my abode never takes birth in this world again. Generally, in all the religions of the world, people approach God or the Supreme Power for artha kama dhamma moksha, for economic improvement, for sense gratification, various types of material pleasures. Some are gross, the pleasures that come to our eyes or our skin or our nose or our ears or our tongue or subtle sense gratification. The pleasure of feeling that I am the controller, I am the proprietor, profit, adoration, distinction. And some for good reasons to attain salvation from suffering and ultimately achieve liberation from all suffering. But this Srimad Bhagavatam declares all of these aspirations as Kaitava Dharma. They are certainly positive, but they are not the true goal. Prema Pumartha Mahan is the true goal of religion. To love Krishna, to love God. Savai Pung Sang Paro Dharmo Yatopaktir Hoksha Jaya Hoitakiya Pratihataya Yatma Suprasid. The supreme Dharma. Dharma is sometimes defined as occupation or religion or spiritual path, or the inseparable nature of every living being. The supreme Dharma is loving service to the supreme transcendent absolute truth. And that service must be unconditional by any circumstances, whether it's easy or difficult, whether it's hot or cold, whether we're getting honor or dishonor, pleasure or pain. Even in the name of material success or victory, we should not be conditioned by those things. And it should not be motivated by any type of arrogance or selfishness. Samsidhir Haditoshanam. True Dharma is that whatever we do, whatever we think, whatever we speak, our motivation is to please Krishna. But how can we possibly have that focus when we're constantly being bombarded by distractions in this world? Most of us have very deep-rooted conditionings toward false ego and all of its counterparts. Selfish passion, lust, anger, envy, greed, illusion, arrogance. They seem very difficult. Vyavashayatmaka buddhir ekeha kurunandana bahusha kahyanantascha buddhayo vyavashayana. Krishna tells in Gita that those who are on this path must be focused on the true goal. Our aim should be one. The minds of those who are irresolute are many-branched. So along with understanding the beauty of spiritual life, we are given so much philosophy and wonderful descriptive stories of how this material world ultimately is not the place we should be looking for happiness. we could find true ecstatic happiness in this world, Prahlad Maharaj said, if we're not looking for it in this world. Krishna tells in Gita that true happiness is within ourselves, in the nature of the soul when it is awakened. And then while we're living in this world, we see everything in relationship to our true nature. And that's what this first beautiful verse that Srila Prabhupada quotes is telling us. Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suhridam sarvabhutanam gyatvamam shantimrichtati. We could be completely ecstatic and peaceful in this world if we just have this perception and realization that everything's the property of Krishna. Therefore, everything is meant to be utilized in the loving service in harmony with the will of the Lord. And He's our true, ever well-wishing best friend. Then the world, actually, we see Krishna. We see Krishna in an opportunity to serve in every situation. But when our consciousness is separated from our nature as the eternal servant of Krishna, and we try to exploit and enjoy independent of our true nature, then the material world is designed in such a way that we have to suffer. Whether we like the philosophy or not, it's just the way things are. According to Lord Brahma, who was the secondary creator of this world, the happiness of this world makes us very attached to what gives us happiness. But by the power of time, kala, it's inevitable that those people and those things are going to be taken away from us. And to the degree we're attached to those things, to those degree, it's going to cause us pain when it's taken away. A gross example. If someone you really love dies, it really causes pain to your heart. If you read the newspaper and, you know, somebody got hit by a car and died somewhere in St. Petersburg and you never knew them, you think, oh, I'm sorry. But you're not crying and weeping and doing pujas and all of that. Because they never really gave you the pleasure of love. If you're really attached to something and you lose it, it causes pain. If it doesn't have any value to you, it doesn't cause you any pain. So this is how material nature works. The happiness of this world is actually the source of suffering because it gets us really attached to something and inevitably we're going to lose it. And then there's pain. So when we understand this carefully, we see through the propaganda of Maya. It's like a famous story of Srila Prabhupada was driving in a car and he saw a huge billboard. In India they call them hoardings. And it had a picture of a beautiful man and a beautiful lady under a waterfall smoking cigarettes. And there was a lot of mist and beautiful trees and it said, "Be cool and smoke cool, refreshingly cool." Prabhupada said, "They're smoking fire, they're inhaling fire, and they're telling them it's cool. It's refreshing. And because you're seeing the sign, you really think it's like that." And I remember, I used to see people smoking cool and saying, "This is so cool, so refreshing." Because we're programmed by our surroundings. Maya means that which is not. It's not really the way it is.
Maya promises us so much pleasure and so much happiness through fulfilling so many temptations. But it's very important that we see through it. It's very shallow. It's very hollow. It just makes us very addicted to those things. And then when we do realize how it's not good for me, it's really hard to give up. Vishayavani vartante niraharasya dehina rasavarajam rasopyasya parandrisvani vartate. The Gita recommends the way to overcome these temporary temptations for pleasure in this world is to experience something higher. That is the principle of bhakti. And what is the higher taste? It's being reconnected with our own souls and connecting our souls with Krishna, who is all attractive. Krishna tells in Bhagavad Gita, whatever is beautiful and wonderful in this creation is just a spark of my splendor. Krishna is the source of and the embodiment of infinite beauty, infinite wealth, infinite knowledge, infinite fame, and forever. Everyone is ultimately searching for Krishna. But when we forget, we try to find Krishna in so many other things. And they only distract us and pull us further and further away. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are many graphic stories that give us a good lesson of this. Sometimes they're very extreme. And sometimes extreme stories, like this one we're reading today, we think, that doesn't really relate to me. But it does. That's why Sukadev Goswami speaks them. They're extreme, just to really get our attention, to listen carefully. And then if we're actually sincere, we will process that knowledge. But what am I supposed to learn? How does this really pertain to my life today and forever? May I tell the story? Begins long ago. A great yogi. He was a powerful mystic yogi. His name is Sobari Muni. He was so powerful. Now, some of us, we think we're better than other yogis because we could meditate longer. Well, okay, maybe you are. But let's compare ourselves to Sobari Muni. He was such a powerful yogi. He could meditate underwater in a river for months at a time. Do you know anyone who could do that? But by Krishna's grace, he was really intelligent in the sense that he chose to be in the Yamuna River, in the Vrindavan area. In fact, was right in Vrindavan. And he was, this is before Krishna directly appeared in this world. So Sobari Muni was doing his meditation, and he really became very compassionate to all living beings. And he was especially compassionate to all the fish, because they're the only people around. So one time, Garuda, I hope you like this story. He's sitting on top of all of our heads today. Garuda is a bird. Not an ordinary bird. He's a great devotee in a bird life. And he's the carrier of Lord Vishnu on many occasions. So it's the nature of birds to eat fish. sometimes. So when a bird eats fish, they're not breaking regulative principles because it's their nature. When a human does, then there's karma attached to it. It's unfavorable for our spiritual lives. But for Garuda, it's just his nature, even though he's a great devotee. So he came to that area, and he was about to eat a fish. And Sovari Muni, he was friends with all those fish because he was living with them. They were like family to him. So he warned Garuda, don't touch this fish. But Garuda ate the fish. Sovari Muni was so angry. Now, it was a sense of compassion. He really felt not only for the fish that was eaten, but all the other fish. They were his family members. And he was kind of a leader among the fish. So all the fish were in distress. And Sovari Muni saw this and he felt their pain. Hare Krishna, special effects. That was... Something's happening back there. Well, what we have to carefully understand from this story, we don't have to, but the opportunity is there, is that compassion could be in the mode of ignorance, the mode of passion, the mode of goodness, or it can be connected with the truth of the soul. It could be transcendental. So Sovari Muni, he was feeling compassion, but he wasn't recognizing a higher principle, that Garuda was a bird. So he wasn't doing anything wrong. And second of all, he was a great Vaishnav. He was very dear to the Lord. Samsidhir Haritoshanam. Whatever we do, if it doesn't please Krishna, Sarameva Kevalam, it has really no spiritual value at all. If it doesn't please Krishna what we do, then it will just implicate us in the modes of nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, and these modes are always shifting around. They're always affecting each other. So listen carefully what's about to happen. Sovari Muni was feeling compassionate on a material level, but he was disconnected from the principle of bhakti of what pleases Krishna. So even in the name of compassion, he got so angry, he cursed Garuda. Now, he had the power to curse. So sometimes when you have things, you become proud of it. There was a certain type of pride that he had. He cursed our Garuda. Because you have done this, even though I told you not to do this, if you ever come back to this place, you will die. Om Tat Sat, finish. So Garuda, he just accepted it as Krishna's arrangement and flew away. But Sovari Muni, he cursed a great devotee because he didn't understand the heart of that devotee. We have to be very careful when we're dealing with devotees. And because he cursed a great devotee like that to die if he ever came back to Vrindavan, Krishna was not pleased with him. So what was the result of his material compassion without a connection to Krishna, which ultimately led to anger and offensiveness, violence? Cursing someone to die is quite violent, especially when your curses work, which his did. So then he went back underwater to do meditation. You see, whatever abilities we have is only by the higher power of grace. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasha ahankara vimutatma karita hamiti manyate. Those who are under illusion think themselves to be the doers of activities. We have seen in the story of Vishwamitra Muni, even though he was such a powerful yogi who could, he wanted to have a child without getting married. So he just chanted a mantra and a tree grew from the ground, and then from the fruit of the tree came a little baby. How many of us can do that? But still, because he didn't have the grace of Krishna with him, he fell away and lost all of his powers. So Shobari Muni, such a powerful yogi, he can be underground in meditation, and he doesn't even drink the water. Can you imagine that? He's just meditating. And he was so compassionate to these fish that he cursed such a great devotee. What happened? The same fish became the cause of his fall down. The same fish that he was so compassionate toward while he's in meditation. He was a yogi. He was a swami kind of yogi. He was celibate, detached. He didn't have any house. He didn't have any possessions for so many years. He didn't have a change of clothes. Of course, I guess you don't need them when you're underwater all the time. But he was down there, and he saw two little fish having a romantic affair together. And by seeing the sexual attraction that two fish were sharing, this desire awakened in his heart. And you know what he did? He came out of the water. And the king of Mathura at that time, his name was Mandata. And Mandata had 50 daughters. So Sobri Muni went to the king and said, "I want to marry one of your daughters." And the king looked at him like, "My God." And the king just said the right thing. He said, "My daughters are free to marry whoever they want to marry," knowing that nobody's going to marry him because he was really old. He was like hundreds of years old. And he was a yogi, and he had long, matted hair that was all tangled, and he was underwater, so his skin was kind of strange. And because he was so old, his limbs were kind of trembling, and his head was moving in a certain way. So he was thinking, nobody's going to want to marry me. So he just said a mantra. This was his power. He said a mantra and he became young and beautiful, handsome and strong. And then he went back to the king. And one of the messengers brought him to the princess's palaces. And all 50 fell in love with him. They all wanted to marry him. So the day before, he's living underwater with fish, and now he's living with 50 beautiful princesses. And by his yogic mystic powers, he started chanting all sorts of different mantras, and he created palaces for each one of them, and he created gardens and lakes, and all these beautiful birds were singing, and maidservants and servants, and so many people were all around. King Mandata, who happened to be the emperor, when he saw the luxurious conditions that his daughters were living with, with Shobari Muni, he was completely humbled. He realized, even as a king, I have nothing compared to this man. So the concept of living happily ever after does not apply to this part of the story. He was happy. And all his princesses, his wives were happy. But then, you know, there was only one form of him. And all of them wanted to be with him. So there became some difficulties. And he had to deal with it all. But he was enjoying like anything. He was really enjoying. He was working everything out. It's a challenge, grihastha life. And eventually, after some time, we come to this particular verse, where he's been enjoying for years with all these people luxuries and pleasures that we cannot even dream of. But because he did his meditation in the Yamuna River, it's a holy river, in the abode of Vrindavan, and ultimately, it wasn't due to evil or envy so much that he cursed. It was just because he was disconnected from the truth when he cursed Garuda. Because of his false pride. It's very dangerous when we have a lot of power, a lot of knowledge, a lot of wealth. Janmaishwarya Shruti Shribir Edamanam Vatapuman. Queen Kunti said they are great disqualifications for spiritual life. Because when we have a lot of wealth, a lot of knowledge, a lot of fame, a lot of beauty, we tend to think ourselves better than others. And in that pride, not only is it difficult for us to really take shelter of Krishna, not only is it really difficult to call out with feeling the names of Krishna, but we have the tendency to think ourselves having the right to make offenses to others. And we can really be convinced of it too. But if we have all those things, but we understand our true position as humble servants of the Lord, then we could use all those things as great facilities for devotional service. Trinadapi sunichena taro ibasihishnana amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. Shobari Muni, he was actually blessed that he could come to the conclusion, after trying to enjoy so many things of this world, he understood, I'm wasting my time completely. This is not happiness at all. I want self-realization. I want Krishna. And he told all his wives, I'm going to the forest to focus my heart completely in devotional service. And his wife said, we're coming with you, because we're sick of all this stuff too. So they all went to the forest. And it describes by Shukadev Goswami that he perfected his life. And when he did come to that point, the inevitable, where he left his body, he went back home, back to Godhead. He attained spiritual perfection, and all his wives attained spiritual perfection. So it did end with happily ever after. But as far as his sense of compassion, because his sense of compassion was not based on spiritual truths and it wasn't pleasing to Krishna, it ultimately wasn't having the result. Because what happened is this. I'm going to skip ahead one canto. Kaliya. It's a long story. But Kali was so powerful. He was so magnanimous. He was just magnified his strength, his power, his fame. He was a serpent. And because of that, he was very arrogant. And he thought he can get away with anything. Who can do anything to me? But somehow or other, he offended Garuda. And he had a fight with Garuda because he thought he could win. And he bit Garuda with his poisonous fangs and thought, now he's dead. And Garuda just laughed at him and came at him. And Kali understood, I'm dead unless I run somewhere. So he understood there's only one place in the world he can get away from Garuda. And that's the Yamuna in Vrindavan, its little lake, because Garuda was cursed by Shobari Muni. So Kali went to live there. And his poison was so bad that when he came to live in the lake, all the fish that Shobari Muni, the descendants of all the fish that he was trying to be compassionate, they all died from Kali's poison. Now, why am I telling you this terrible story? Because we like fish. Not to eat them. We like them as living entities, parts and parcels, and children of Krishna. But the principle is, unless we have knowledge, unless we have this connection to the truth, Krishna says in Gita, when you have thus learned the truth, you will know that all living beings are in me and of me and are mine. Unless we understand from that perspective, even our trying to do good in this world can have very opposite effects in due course of time. Shobari Muni was trying to be compassionate, but in so he gave into anger, he offended great people, he displeased Krishna, he fell from his own situation, and all the fish got poisoned by Kaliya. But eventually, because they all got poisoned, the Yamuna River in Vrindavan, they also got liberated probably. So Srimad Bhagavatam goes very, very deeply in its teachings of how to really make spiritual progress in every situation of life. And the stories of great souls who teach us how to maintain spiritual integrity in all situations are there as our guiding light. And also the stories of those who made mistakes, the same kind of mistakes that we're prone to, are a very guiding light for our spiritual progress. For great personalities who have actually understood the wealth of the soul, love and devotion to Krishna, then we understand that money and property and power and prestige and sensual prowess in this world is actually quite pathetic when we're attached to those things. It's only because of a hollowness, a shallowness in our own hearts that we need these things. Devotee doesn't need those things. Devotee's happy with a simple life, but is happy to utilize whatever God gives us for seva. Just recently, I'm going to end with one little story. I was at our Govardhan Eco Village, and I was sitting with the cows. So nice cows, and the calves, and the bulls, and they were all like they're all so nice and friendly with each other, and just so grounding to be near cows. It just gives us a feeling of practically being liberated from all the complexities and egoism of this whole world when you're just with the simplicity of cows. The mothers are licking the babies, and the babies are drinking milk from the mothers, and they're playing with each other, and the bulls are going, and devotees are brushing them, and they're going, so nice, and making cow dung patties. One lady, she might come here within a day or two, but she's a Hollywood lady, and she came with a very well-known person to our eco-village this year. And we were walking around, and we were sitting with the cows and the calves and the bulls, and she kind of disappeared. We were wondering, where is she? And a little later, we saw there was this little village lady who never went to school. She doesn't speak English. And this lady from Hollywood, she wanted to learn from this village lady how to do what she was doing. So the lady was teaching her. She gave her a little wicker basket, and was going behind cows. And when the cows offered dung to Mother Earth, as soon as it came out, it was very warm and kind of smoking and smushy. With bare hand, pick it up and put it in the basket. Some of our brahmacharis put on gloves when they do that. But this California lady was doing it with her bare hands with this lady. And she was so happy just going around and picking up cow dung. And then I checked about her a little later, and the village lady is teaching her how to take that fresh, warm cow dung and mix straw in it and make patties and stick it on wall. Cow dung patties. And she had all these cow dung patties on the wall. And she called her friend to take a photo of her standing next to the cow dung patties that she took. And I suggested, why don't you put your handprint in one? And she did it. And she said, this is better than having a handprint in front of the Chinese restaurant in Hollywood. What is that place? The Chinese theater. She said, it's better than having a handprint. So I definitely agreed with her. But anyways, I was there one day, and then a couple months later, actually, I was there, and I was with the cows and with the cow dung, and then I had to take a plane to an airport, and then from the airport, the next day I had this event in Dubai. And I'm kind of spaced out, everyone knows that. Especially when it comes to organization and management. So I don't really know where I'm going. I just kind of... So the next day, I'm supposed to give a lecture in the Royal Ballroom of the most luxurious hotel on Earth. It's called Burj Arabia. It's a 7-star hotel. It's the only 7-star hotel in the world. And it's really luxurious. They were giving me a little tour before my talk, and they showed me one room. And I was with a couple other people, and one person asked, a devotee from Mumbai came and said, how much does it cost to stay in here every night? It's $30,000 a night. Hare Krishna. I was thinking, how do you sleep in a place like that? You know, every minute you're sleeping is costing like hundreds of dollars. But anyways, on top of that is this royal ballroom, which was really a royal ballroom. There was gold and the carpets and the chandeliers, and there was all these very high-level business people and ambassadors were there. And I'm wondering, what am I doing here? But I had to give a talk. And then the Indian ambassador introduced me. And he said that we are today in the most luxurious hotel in the world. And all of you are either millionaires or billionaires. And Radhanath Swami has come to speak on the subject of simple living and high thinking. He said, I'm really interested to see what he's going to say. And that was the introduction. So I kind of prayed to Prabhupada. I don't remember what I said, but I think I was telling him about the cow dung patties. But this is what Prabhupada taught us. Simple living, high thinking. He quoted his guru, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who said, the first principle of a Vaishnav is simplicity. Sharalata. Simplicity means without duplicity. Simplicity means without a selfish agenda, without arrogance. Simplicity means we're happy with Krishna. And whether we're living in a beautiful palace like Ambarish Maharaj was, or like King Prataparudra, he was a great king with opulence that no one in this world can compare with today. And he wanted to leave his kingdom to be a beggar. But Lord Chaitanya and all the devotees wanted him to remain as a king because he was doing such good service in that place. He stayed in his palace. The Pandavas were living in the forest, and they also moved into the palace of Hastinapur. Little Prahlad, he was detached from everything except remembering Krishna. And he was also made a king and had family and palaces. So being simple doesn't mean not having anything. Simple living, high thinking means with whatever role we're in society, whether we're Kolavacha Sridhar, a banana leaf seller, or King Prataparudra, the emperor, whatever our position may be, we have a simple, well-wishing heart. We're not envious. We're not greedy. Samsidya Hari Toshana. We just want to please Krishna and chant his holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. And we learn the true spirit of compassion from this loving connection with Krishna. This is what Srila Prabhupada has given us. Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. The greatest wealth, the greatest benediction is that Krishna has descended at his holy names. Because by learning in the association of devotees how to chant the holy names of the Lord properly, that connection, that love, that compassion is awakened in our hearts. I'll end at this moment with one little reflection, how important the association of devotees are. Shobhari Muni was a great yogi who could fast, and he didn't even sleep underwater. He was just meditating. He was really austere. But he didn't have association. He had some good association. When he saw those fish doing their romantic activities together, somebody would have said, Shobari Prabhu, forget it. It's not like this. It's not like this. He was alone. So he fell victim to Maya. We need to humble ourselves before Srila Prabhupada's teachings, before the holy names, and to each other. Thank you very much. Is there time for questions? Maybe one or two.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much, Maharaj. But before we take any questions, I just want to remind everybody, Maharaj will be giving the Sunday Peace Lecture.
No, and we won't. I won't.
You won't?
No. I won't be here on Sunday.
Hare Krishna.
When did that happen? The schedule makers were supposed to tell you that, but I guess they didn't tell you.
Hare Bom.
But I'll be around if you want to engage me in some service somehow or other.
So when are you leaving, Maharaj?
I'm kind of... I don't know.
All right, we'll talk at breakfast.
I'm leaving today, but I'm coming back tomorrow, and then I'm leaving.
We'll talk at breakfast.
Days,
we'll try to get at least a few more classes. If you can't give the Sunday Peace Lecture, then at least a few more Bhagavatam classes. Hare Krishna.
I am your obedient servant.
Thank you for a beautiful class, Maharaj. My question is something to do with Garuda. You mentioned that his nature... He was a fish. His nature was to eat fish. He was a bird, so his nature was to eat fish. But in general, my impression is that nature is something material. It's something that has to be overcome. In the case of at least human beings,